All right, my friends, good evening, welcome to your Wednesday Night Live. Sorry, I was going to do video, but the camera just said, Steph, you're too damn handsome. It's not possible. I can't process this level of clavicular style perfection, so it has actually picked up its skirts and left in search of less handsome visages, which apparently it says it can find everywhere, except of course, where I am. So that's a technical challenge I'm going to have to figure out. So I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, there's this stuff that's floating around at the moment, which is that the US government or other governments are talking about space aliens. We're going to get our space aliens on. And guys, it's cute, you know, this idea that there's Klingons and Romulans and Vulcans and all of this kind of stuff all scattered throughout the galaxy. And you can fly around and faster than light and all of that. I mean, just the odds of any civilization being anywhere close to where we are in the 14 plus billion years of the universe, that's, you know, 4 billion years of life or whatever it is. The idea that we'd be anywhere close in development is crazy because, you know, in the Star Trek universe, everyone's kind of similar in their levels of development. That's not going to happen. We're going to come across single-celled organisms or maybe some plants and maybe some tiny bugs or trilobites or whatever it is. But we're not going to come across other humanoid creatures similar in development to ourselves. The odds of that are just too small. And as far as interstellar travel goes, you know, this idea that we're going to be out there among the stars, it's not a thing. And I'll get to the logical fallacy, but let's just look at the basics of it, right? So interstellar travel, of course, it's not impossible. I mean, if you're given a long enough timeline, a snail could get there. You could get there at a snail speed if you are willing to wait for virtually forever. So it's not a matter of impossibility. It's a matter of impracticability. So the nearest stars, like Proxima Centauri, at about 4.24 light years. So, of course, light travels at 186,000 miles per second, or about 300,000 kilometers per second, mind-blindingly fast. Like, it takes 8 minutes for light to get from the sun to Earth. It's a quarter second to get from the Earth to the moon, and so on. So it's incredibly fast. So what are some of the barriers? The distance is, again, it's almost incomprehensible. One light year is 9.46 times 10 to the 12th kilometers. So 4.2 light years away, even at the speed of light, one road travel takes over 4 years. But nothing with mass can reach or exceed c. C is the shorthand for the speed of light. This is per Einstein's special relativity, 1905. It's been confirmed in just about every way that a scientific theory can be confirmed. Light bends around the sun, and they've taken atomic clocks and gone fast around the Earth, and the time has changed a little bit as relativity. Like, as you go faster, time slows down, all of that kind of stuff. So you can't get there. You can't even get close in particular. As you get closer to the speed of light, you need more and more energy to get faster. Even modest relativistic speeds would demand planet-scale energy budgets, like the kind of energy that would be contained in an entire planet. And you've got the tyranny of the rocket equation, conservation of momentum. Rockets are useless for interstellar distances. We've got this one Voyager 1 would take about 75,000 years to reach Proxima Centauri. Even advanced systems, nuclear fusion, antimatter, they call these big solar winds. I remember reading about as a teenager that you take the solar wind and these giant sails, they hit limits because you just have problems with propulsion systems. Laser sails bypass this for some of it, but not for deceleration or crude round trips. You must carry fuel to accelerate the fuel, plus enough of deceleration at the destination, right? The mass ratio grows exponentially with the energy requirements for propelling. So whatever fuel you need, you've got to carry with you, which makes it huge and enormous. And then you also need to decelerate at the destination, right? So if it takes you a while to accelerate to something like, I don't know, 5% of the speed of light, or maybe even 10%, although that's pushing it for reasons we'll get to in a second, you still have to find ways to decelerate. So you have to retain enough fuel with you to decelerate and then maybe even come back. And like, it's just not possible to pack that much fuel and have it work. Number three, of course, interstellar space isn't empty. What does God love the most? According to biologists, it is beetles, because it's the most common species around, pretty much. And according to physicists, it's hydrogen. It's like 99% of matter or whatever it is hydrogen. So interstellar space isn't empty. There's trace dust and about one hydrogen atom per cubic centimeter. So at relativistic speeds, when you're starting to approach even 5-10% the speed of light, incoming particles appear as ultra-high energy radiation or projectiles due to the relativistic Doppler or blue shift effect. So even a dust grain, micron-sized, carries kinetic energy when it hits a ship, a spaceship, equivalent to a bomb or a nuke. The ship experiences erosion, heating, and radiation that can destroy electronics or kill crews. And you say, oh, no, we'll build shields. But shielding against this would add enormous mass, worsening the rocket equation problem. So even at 0.1 to 0.3 speed of light, like 10% to 30% of the speed of light, huge barrier. So magnetic scoops or ablation shields help theoretically, but add complexity and mass. Now, speculative faster-than-light workarounds like Alcubierre warp drives or wormholes require exotic matter with negative energy density. This violates known energy conditions, may be unstable, creates closed timeline curves, time travel paradoxes, and demands godlike energy levels. And most physicists view them as impractical or impossible with real matter. So, with known physics, it's not that interstellar travel is forbidden, like a square circle or 2 and 2 make 5, but it's prohibitively difficult. Slow robotic probes might reach nearby stars potentially in decades, but crewed missions would take centuries to millennia or require breakthroughs in energy shielding or propulsion efficiency. The Fermi paradox silence of the universe may partly reflect these same barriers. No civilization easily hops between stars. So the Fermi paradox is a reference to the contradiction between the high probability of extraterrestrial life in the universe and the lack of evidence for or contact with such civilizations. The famous physicist Enrico Fermi asked during a discussion about the existence of aliens, where is everybody? Where is everybody? And we are stuck in our solar system. We cannot get to other stars. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love science fiction. I really do. And it would be fantastic to be out there in the universe fencing with Klingons or whatever, but it is not a real thing. The distances, I mean, even to the closest star, the distances and the technology requirement, the energy requirements and so on are just too huge. I was sort of quoting on X just to give people a sense of just how absolutely staggeringly ginormous these distances are between stars. I was pointing out, if you were to get a spaceship going at the speed of sound, right? That's about 1,235 kilometers per hour. It would take 3.8 million years to reach Alpha Centauri. Now, the reason I say that is not because I think that you'd send a spaceship off that's going to take close to 4 million years to get to a local star, but just, you know, the speed of sound is pretty fast. And the fastest aircraft was the X-15, 7,274 kilometers per hour. 7,274 kilometers per hour would still take about 75,000 years. So the distances are almost impossible for us to imagine. If you look at how difficult it has been to cross a quarter of a second of light distance, right? In terms of light years, the moon is a quarter of a second away, and it takes every ounce of our available technology to go there and back. We're not talking a quarter of a second, we're talking well north of 4 years of light travel. Now, so I wrote, we cannot truly comprehend how far away the closest star system is. And I said, no aliens, bros. Now, that doesn't mean that there aren't space aliens out there. I'm certain that there are space aliens out there. It's a little confusing as to why there aren't any signs. Maybe we are just completely unique in the universe. But given that there are 100 billion stars in our galaxy and there are 100 billion galaxies, it is as close to a certainty as you can get without it being syllogistical reasoning, like deductive reasoning, which is 100% not inductive reasoning, which is probabilistic. It is as certain as you can possibly get without proof that there is other life out there in the universe. The question is, where is it all? Now, the big challenge, and I'm happy to take calls. We'll get to callers in a second if you'd like to ask for questions, comments. Could be about any topic you want, of course. But the big challenge is what kind of space aliens would visit us. Now, typically, what's discussed or what's talked about in science fiction are space aliens that are militaristic. They come in military vessels. That's not, like, from a government or something. That's not going to be the case. Governments are so horrendously inefficient that there's absolutely no way governments will ever develop interstellar travel of any kind. It's absolutely not going to happen. I mean, we couldn't even keep the Concorde running. We couldn't keep the space shuttle running. It's taken 40, 50 years to get back to the moon, 40 or 50 years. There's just no way that governments would be even remotely efficient enough to be able to create interstellar travel. Interstellar travel is only going to come out of the free market. It's only going to come out of the private sector. And it's only when we have a stateless society, a government-free society, that we will even remotely have the possibility of being able to have that kind of efficiency. So the only people who are going to come to visit us are traders. And if traders come, free market societies come, then what would happen is they would view us as we would view a slave society, and they would try to free us from the grip of tyrannical politics and endless debt and so on. But the problem is, well, one of the many problems is how do societies survive their own success? I talk about this in my novel called The Future, which you should definitely check out. It's available free at freedomain.com/books. But how do we survive our own success? The typical pattern, why societies don't last, why very successful empires tend to self-collapse within 2 to 250 years, is that freedom breeds inequality. If you have a raw meritocracy, which means the most able produce and gain the most resources, the more free you are, the more unequal are your outcomes. And when you have unequal outcomes, then those who have less, and even the poorest people in the West have infinitely more than the richest people throughout most of human history, but that doesn't matter to most people because they don't think of it that way. I mean, we can all look at Elon Musk and feel, A, we should get hair transplants, B, maybe we should be shaped like a very albino barrel, and C, we're poor because he's got hundreds of billions of dollars. But then we look at the general wealth that we have as human beings and the access to good dentistry and optometry and clean water and decent food and being able to cool things down in the summer, warm things up in the winter. I mean, just something to remember. I think about this at least a couple of times every summer. You could be the richest person in all of human history prior to a relatively recent 100 years ago or so, maybe 100 years or so. You could be the wealthiest person in the world, and it was almost impossible to get a drink cooler than room temperature because there were no ice boxes in the home, no fridges, right? No freezers. And I don't know about you, man, it's a really hot day, and you get a cold drink. Oh, it's glorious. It really is one of life's really great, deep pleasures to have a cold drink on a hot day. And you could be the Queen of Sheba, you could be Hammurabi, you could be Alexander the Great, and it was virtually impossible to get a drink cooler than the average temperature in your environment. Like, you could get some mountain runoff glacier stream, and right? But just think about, like, Cleopatra, right? She's living in the Egypt or the Nile or whatever it was, and how's she going to get a cold drink? She can't. I mean, I guess maybe someone could run at full tilt from some glacier. I mean, it's the closest glacier to Egypt. It's a long way. So, I mean, just things as simple as that. Every meal in the past, every drink, you're kind of rolling the dice as to whether there's bacteria that's going to give you grip or kill you or something like that, right? I was reading the biography of one of my ancestors, and he had cysts on his head, sebaceous gland cysts or something like that. Constant problem, and one of them got infected. I think that's what he died of. I mean, just simple things. I got a bee sting last summer. My hand swelled up like two balloons, and I just got some antibiotics. Away it went. Honestly, it could have killed me in the past. So people don't care how well they're doing. They only care how well they're doing relative to, I mean, the richest guy in the world. So they feel poor. So when you have freedom, which produces economic growth and inequality, then the masses of the poor get resentful. And then the sophists come along and say, "Ah, well, you see, my poor, poor friend, the only reason that Elon Musk has so much is he's stolen from you." And then all of the idiots on the planet are like, "Yeah, yeah, he stole those rockets from me. Yeah, he stole that boring company. Yeah, he stole PayPal from me." And it's like, no, he didn't. He just, you know, if I write a book, I didn't steal the book from you. If I write a song, I didn't steal the song from you, right? I just made something. But all of the mouth-breathing Neanderthals in the world just rise up like baying zombie brain-dead hounds from hell to say, "Yes, he stole from me. I gotta get back what's mine," right? And then they just get resentful. And then the government steps in and takes all the resources from the most competent and gives them to the most idiotic and stupid, who then waste and destroy all those resources. You get an economic collapse, and you never get to the stars at all. You can't. You can't ever have a sustainedly successful society if success in that society sows the seeds and breeds its own destruction. At some point, the wealthy, smart, intelligent, competent people are going to say to the dumb, greedy horde who feel aggrieved because they haven't been able to achieve the same level of success, the smart people are going to have to say to the dummies, "Shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Be grateful. Be happy. Be content. You're doing way better than your ancestors. Shut the fuck up." No, you're not going to get a mansion on the hill and a young Heidi Klum as your bride. You get other amazing things: air conditioning, fridges, ice boxes, dishwashers, laundromats. You're going to get other amazing things. But just shut the fuck up. Shut up. Stop whining. Enjoy your life. The fact that we, as the gulch intelligent people, create all of this amazing, wonderful stuff because we're ambitious and hardworking and curious and concerned, you should be grateful for. But at some point, the wealthy and the successful are going to have to say to the pathologically resentful, "Shut the fuck up." And I actually think that's kind of coming, personally. I think that's coming, and I think it's coming in a very brutal way, sort of depopulation agenda. But at some point, people are going to have to stop being resentful of the successful and enjoy the fruits of other people's success. I mean, many years ago, I had a dream about singing in the band Queen, right? Songs I can't sing. I can sing like maybe four songs decently in my life. Now, you know, Freddie Mercury seemed to be having a pretty good time on stage, and that would be a lot of fun to do. Should the band Queen ever have me on as their singer? Absolutely not. Absolutely not. Because Freddie Mercury is an infinitely, not just a little bit, like an infinitely better singer than I am. Do I resent that? No. Because if I say I should be the singer in this band, that band would not have achieved any success, and there'd be nothing for me to want to replace. At some point, the successful people have to say to the blindly resentful horde, "Shut the fuck up. Stop whining, stop complaining, stop bitching, stop moaning. Be a little grateful that there's really hardworking people with immense skill in this life who produce wonderful things relatively cheaply for you to enjoy and absorb and use. Elon Musk works insane hours, only taking time out to unwisely choose fairly terrible women to create his living army of Elon Musklets. But at some point, smart people, competent people, able people, just have to have the gumption to say to the resentful masses, shut up. Shut up. I think the elites are there, which is why they're all buying bunkers in New Zealand and shit like that. But yeah, I think the elites are there. And I'm not even going to argue with them that much. I'm not even going to argue with them that much. AI, robotics, efficiency. I mean, in general, the elites have needed workers, and the workers outnumber the elites. But with AI and robotics coming along, it's not long. I'm telling you, 5, 10, 15 years, it's really not long before the elites are just going to look at all of these howling, cursing, aggressive, angry masses and just say, sorry, what are you providing now? What are you? It's not a moral examination. Everybody should be accorded full rights. The non-aggression principle is wrong and bad. Everybody should have property rights. It's not a moral. I'm just talking about a practical evaluation. That it's one thing to annoy the very powerful in the world as long as the very powerful in the world actually need you for something. But when you are not needed and you are very dangerous and annoying, well, it doesn't generally tend to go super well for that kind of thinking. So I would say that in general, one of the reasons we don't see aliens out there and they haven't come to visit us, even if they could somehow deal with the issues of, I mean, it would be an Avatar-style thing. No, they couldn't even do that because you can't transmit information faster than the speed of light. There's no subspace radio or anything like that. So I was going to say, even if they put robots that they could see, and that wouldn't work either because it'd be over 4 years to get the radio signals back and forth. So there aren't aliens out there because intelligent species can only gain wealth and technological expertise through the free market, but the free market produces inequality, and the baying mindless masses who just complain that they don't have a lot of money, other people have more than them, screw you, take you down, attack you. What was it? Elizabeth Warren was talking about how if we tax billionaires, we'll have money for insulin for Americans and blah, blah, blah. It's like, good Lord. Was it the government took in $7 trillion? Can't figure out how to spend wisely. At least 10 to 20% of government spending, at least, is just waste. Waste and fraud. I would say probably closer to 25 to 40% minimum. So the idea that, well, just a little bit more money and we'd be able to do some good. I mean, that's crazy. And the last thing I'll say, I'm happy to take your calls, questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems, whatever's on your mind. Last thing I'll say is this. Lord above, there's a principle. It's a fallacy, really. Hasty generalization, whatever you want to call it. And it goes something like this. Well, you know, in the past, people said that things were impossible, and those things didn't turn out to be impossible. And therefore, you see, therefore, everything is possible in the future. See how that works? So in the past, some people said that airplanes couldn't work. I remember there was a famous one in some newspaper where they said you couldn't travel faster than 20 miles an hour or something like that in an open air car. So all the cars were kind of open air because you wouldn't be able to breathe. You wouldn't get any oxygen, right? So there's always some dunderheaded idiot who said that something was impossible. Was it Paul Krugman saying that in the long run, it would turn out that the internet would have less impact on the economy than the fax machine? Or the inverse Kramer? In my amateur view, of course, Kramer just tells you that stocks are doing badly when he wants his friends to buy them, and he says that stocks are doing well when he wants his friends to sell them. Not serving you. So you can go back in human history and you can find a lot of absurd predictions. This is impossible. Oh, look, we have this. This could never be done. Oh, look, it was done. And then mostly idiots, sorry, I'm less patient with ignorance today for a variety of reasons, But idiots say, well, you know, Steph, people in the past said things were impossible, which turned out to be possible. Therefore, everything in the future is possible. You know, Steph, at some point in the past, people, a few idiots, said that there would never be airplanes. Now there are airplanes, so it is certainly possible in the future that we will find a planet made out of leek soup. In the past, people said things were impossible. Now it turns out that they were possible and have actually been achieved, and therefore, 2 and 2 might make 5, and we're going to find square circles. So people wrongly predicted things in the past, not many, right? But people wrongly predicted things in the past. Therefore, everything is possible in the future. And it just tells me that people are just surrounded by idiots. Now, when you're surrounded by idiots and you're confident of something, they will get angry and resentful at you. Like, I am confident that there will be no faster than light travel. I'm completely confident. I'm completely confident that every time you consider a decision, an entire new universe is not created that then goes off on whatever decision you make, and then another one goes off on some other decision. Should I turn left and right at this intersection? If you turn left, a whole new universe is created. If you turn right, this universe continues. Like, I'm absolutely confident, 100% confident, that entire new universes are not created. I'm 100% confident there's no life after death. I'm 100% confident that there's no such thing as consciousness without matter. And I'm 100% confident that the laws of physics will not be violated. You know, Steph, people made wrong predictions in the past. Therefore, in the future, maybe the speed of light will suddenly become a zillion billion miles a second. No, it won't. It's a constant. Like, gravity's a constant. Inverse square law, conservation of energy, second law of thermodynamics. These are all physical laws that have been around since the beginning of the universe. If it indeed had a beginning, they will be around long after the end of the universe, in whatever shape it takes. These are absolute facts of objective, empirical, and universal reality. And just because idiots made false predictions in the past doesn't mean that we can't, with any certainty, make predictions about the future. People in the past were wrong. That doesn't mean that we will ever wake up in a universe where 2 and 2 make 5. Or that we will have a planet made entirely out of peach pits and banana wedges. Nope, not going to happen. Not a thing, not real, not true. And people get mad at me about this stuff. I don't know. I really genuinely cannot truly comprehend or understand. I cannot understand what it would be like to go through life convinced that you can't be certain of anything. And that anyone who makes any predictions based upon absolute scientific and empirical facts about the future, that they're just wrong. I can't imagine what kind of pea-brained soup fog would be between my ears if I couldn't be certain about anything. You know, idiots are certain about things. Therefore, everyone who's certain about things is an idiot. Tall people are basketball players. You have to be tall to be a basketball player. Therefore, every tall person is a basketball player. The Dunning-Kruger effect. I mean, people are certain about things that are wrong because they've been propagandized. And therefore, midwits think that everyone who is certain is wrong. How dare, Steph, how dare you be so close-minded as to say that we can't go faster than the speed of light? Well, I'm pretty certain. How dare you say that human beings can't breathe underwater without scuba? How dare you say that there can't be manta rays in space? I dare say. I do, in fact, dare say. Like this guy wrote when I posted this stuff, and I said, there are no aliens coming to visit us. Yeah, there are probably aliens out there, but This guy, John, wrote, "True, unless they've peered through the fabric of reality to the point where space and time can be manipulated at will. How could you write that off as a possibility?" Oh my God. How can you write off as a possibility that the mind can manipulate space and time at will? I can. Somebody else wrote, Farrell, philosopher, says, "We advanced from the Wright brothers' first flight to space travel in the span of one human lifetime. Our knowledge is increasing at an exponential rate. Why is it so hard to believe we could not overcome this obstacle in 100 or 200 years? I think it will take much less." This is similar to an old programming joke, I remember. And the programming joke was, "I want a computer fast enough to finish an infinite loop in 10 seconds. So an infinite loop is when the computer is chasing its own tail. So in general, if you've not been a programmer, I was a programmer for many years, there are lines of code because the computer has to know in what order to process the code. So if you have, and there's a go-to statement in BASIC, which stands for Beginner's Applied Symbolic Instruction. BASIC, Beginner's Applied Symbolic Instruction Code. Sorry about that. I had a brain wander. And nobody over 12 should be using it, but I made quite a career out of it, and COBOL, and so on. And ASP.NET, ooh, back in the day. So you have a line of computer code that says go to, right? So you can say, go to line 50, like skip over the next couple of lines, go to line 50. And if you have in line 10 of your computer code, go to line 20, the computer then jumps to line 20 and says, I'm going to process that line of code. And then if the computer code in line 20 says, go to line 10 and process that code, then the computer is stuck in an infinite loop. Line 10 says go to line 20, line 20 says go to line 10, and it just goes 10, 20, 10, 20, 10, like it will never stop. I mean, eventually it'll break down or whatever it is, right? But so the people are saying things to me like, well, Steph, our computer speed is increasing enormously, right? Computer speed doubles every 18 months or whatever it is, right? So computer is Moore's law, right? Or at least it used to be. So Steph, computers are getting faster and faster. So you can't say for sure that a computer won't be so fast that it can complete an infinite loop in 10 seconds. I'm like, yes, I can. An infinite loop is not broken by processing speed. All that happens is that you run through iterations of the infinite loop faster and faster. That's why there's control break, right? If your code is looping, you can break it and interrupt the processing. It's crazy. Why is it hard? So hard for people to accept that reality is reality. You cannot wave away the laws of physics and call yourself an intelligent and educated person. It's just a bunch of bullshit mysticism. It's like faster than light, warp drives, we're going into hyperspace. All interstellar science fiction has to make up magic that allows you to go back and forth between the stars. It's just magic. It's just a literary convenience. It's like in the old Star Trek, like the 1960s Star Trek, they wanted to save money on having spaceships flying around, all the science fiction effects. They wanted to save money, and so they invented the teleporter so that they could just shimmer down to planets without having to get into spaceships and have the spaceships fly down. It was just a convenience. Let's just get them down to the planet. Oh, teleport, right? Yeah, fine, whatever, right? Why does my butt look so big? So it's just a literary device. It's not science. It's like, wow, wouldn't it be great if we could travel between the stars really quickly? Sure. It's like time travel. It's not possible. It's not a real thing that you can set yourself back to Victorian England and go hunt Jack the Ripper, right? That's not a real thing. It's just a cool little literary trick. I mean, in Lord of the Rings, Aragorn goes and gets an army of the dead to fight. Okay, but nobody in the real world goes to get the army of the dead to fight, right? It's just a literary, it's like magic. And that's all it is a fun, kind It's a kind of magic. It's a fun kind of magic. That's all it is. It's not real. It's not real. And, you know, it's really hard to understand how many dunderheads there are in the world until you start pointing out basic facts on social media. Oh, they come out. The arrogance. The arrogance. Respect for thinkers. Respect for people who've done the research. Respect for people who've done the work. Of course, governments and academia are very keen to destroy our ability to have respect for experts because they're all so compromised and so on. I just, while we're waiting, freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. Shop.freedomain.com for your merch. freedomain.com/call for your call in shoes. Shoes. I got a really big shoe. All right. Well, have yourselves a glorious, lovely, wonderful evening, my friends. Thank you so much for dropping by tonight. And I will talk to you Friday night, where we'll sure have the video cranked up and ready to roll. All the best, my friends. Good night. Bye.